And welcome back, everybody, to today's Brexit podcast. Joining me today for the weekly news roundup is Stand Up Magazine's Steph Farnsworth. Welcome to the show again, Steph. Great to have you back.
Lovely to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. And we're recording on a Sunday evening, and so it's the day after the recent yesterday's London terror attack, and this is going to be out on Tuesday. So events are moving very quickly at the moment. Even just logging online now, the police have made 12 arrests, so I'm sure things would have moved on by the time people hear this. But I think it's, in one way, Steph, it feels like talking about Brexit's quite an irrelevance. You know, surely that everyone would come together in a time like this and share what intelligence and data they have, but perhaps that's not necessarily going to be the case, though, is it?
I think when it's particularly for us right now, it's just the day after. It does feel like there will be unity. Brexit is kind of off the agenda a bit. Of course, that's not really what we're thinking about right now. But down the line, it will be a long-term concern with security because we don't particularly know how it's going to shape up, whether there will be access to being able to share data, particularly with the police database bank. That's been kind of proposed, and politicians are giving conflicting advice about whether data sharing will continue as normal or whether it won't. So it is a question, but like with a lot of Brexit, we don't really have any answers right now, and we won't do for a long time until we're getting really into the deep negotiations with it. And at a time like this, it will be concerning for a lot of people. People want stability and to know that we have a clear path and a clear plan. But at the same time, our security forces every single day in our counter-terrorism units do a very good job. And we know that by the fact that there isn't more incidents that are being reported. They are stopping incidents fairly regularly. We know that terror is an issue. It's just the nature of how we go forward.
One thing that all parties seem to be united on are the fact that our authorities of law and order are trying to keep us all safe, do their utmost and do a remarkable job. I mean, even last night, the entire incident, in a way, was done and dusted within 8 minutes. So whilst there was some talk and some criticism of the terror threat being lowered after the tragic Manchester bombing just a few days before, actually, you know, it was still a severe threat, and it was still, our police forces still reacted to it in an amazingly fast time. You know, something to be incredibly proud of, I think.
Yeah, definitely. They reacted so quickly. And we're hearing those police officers who were caught up as victims as well, trying to protect people. And we should be proud of how the police responded, and also the emergency services just generally. And that should give us some comfort that they were so quick to react and that it was contained, as you said, within 8 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it shows that for all of the, you know, the bad people in this particular episode, there was a damn sight more good people. I mean, you know, what have we got? We've got three terrorists who were shot dead on the scene, and then how many, you know, hundreds and whatever rallied round to try and support in that case. So I think, you know, if people are looking to have any faith in humanity, then maybe that's something that they can clutch onto at this moment.
Definitely, and I think there's been a lot of stories that have came out about bar staff and restaurant staff around the area trying to protect people who were trying to flee the scene and trying to keep them safe. There's always a huge amount of stories of people coming together and of trying to look after each other, such as Muslim taxi drivers trying to get people to safety. And that, in my opinion, when we have events like these, it's those stories that should be focused on, not the terrorists. Let's not give them the attention that they want through what they see as martyrdom. Let's focus on people coming together.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, look, we did talk about whether Brexit will be will improve or make us more kind of susceptible to terrorist type of attacks. And I noticed that Nick Clegg last week put out a warning that with Britain leaving the European Union, we could be then locked out of a vital EU police database that's accessed 16 times per second. I appreciate that came from, that was a piece I picked up on the Lib Dems own website. So I'm sure it would be challenged, but that's quite a worrying line.
It definitely is. And I think across Europe now, terrorist incidents have really caught the eye quite a lot. And there's a general fear of what can we really do to stop it when somebody going out in a car or a van and just doing these things in quite public places. It's often around markets, as we're saying in Germany, or in Paris, somebody's just trying to grab a police gun a couple of months ago. A policeman's gun, and that was just in the streets of Paris. It's with access, of course, to the database, that will help keep us safe. But at the same time, I think the EU, Europe and the UK generally, we're going to have to look at our own questions around terror and the nature of it now, because it isn't just, it used to be whether we target train stations or airports, but now it's very much going out into a car down a street, and how rarely do you police that anyway?
Yeah, and another thing that's proving or could be difficult, stroke almost impossible to police is I suppose cybercrime or how communications is done over the net. And that really can't be done on a nation by nation level. It really has to be more pan-EU or even global.
Yeah, there definitely has to be sharing with that to be as effective as possible. This, for quite a long time, there's been a rise in rhetoric of that we should stay behind our own borders and really put our own nations first. It's seriously Trump's America First slogan. But actually, when you're trying to stay as safe as possible and you're trying to work together, not just to prevent incidents here, but also across the world, we don't want to see incidents like these anywhere. We really have to work together as best as we can. And all we need to know from Brexit is whether that is going to continue efficiently. Because we will still be able to prevent incidents, but will it be as efficient as it possibly can be?
Yeah, because Europol we would not automatically be part of, which is the pan-EU policing agency in The Hague. So that would be something that we would lose our access to that. On the plus side, some of the UK's main national security intelligence sharing partners are with NATO, called the Five Eyes Alliance, are the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. So that's obviously irrespective of whether we're in the European Union or not. But it just seems to be, when things like this happen, it just seems to be we need to take much more of an umbrella attitude and actually, look to cooperate en masse.
Definitely. And I think there's a real fear that there's always been kind of a knee-jerk reaction around security. We saw, actually, just going on to Brexit, around the debate, there was a lot of, we will be safer if we leave the EU, we will have more control over ourselves, we will be able to protect ourselves. But actually, the Remain side didn't do a very good job of really saying, but we're working with partners, and the more intelligence we have, the more that we can spot people who are potentially going to plan terrorist attacks or be susceptible to being converted to Islamist fundamentalism and may want to commit terrorist acts. So the debate itself has really, for quite a long time now, been a bit tainted and has been lost to a really fear-mongering, potentially, tone, and it's not been very productive.
Now, look, amongst all this, we still have a general election going ahead on Thursday. And the reason we wanted to get you on was for you to have a look back at the past week in Brexit and provide us some key points and some of your key points from the past week. So what have you got for us, Steph?
I mean, I think the big story around the general election has, well, for the last week, been the debate and Theresa May's performance when speaking to the audience, but also when she didn't turn up for the debate and had Amber Rudd go in her place rather than face Jeremy Corbyn directly. The debates have been the talking point, particularly on Twitter throughout the week. The debates are actually quite a good showcase of democracy, because you get to see smaller parties, such as the Greens, such as Plaid Cymru, who obviously will get a lot of attention in Wales, but maybe not so much in England. So it really helped connect all corners of the UK and showcase different ideas. But obviously there's a lot of criticism because May didn't seem particularly keen to do that.
Well, no, because from a Tory point of view, this election was not supposed to be about debates. This election was supposed to be about a clear mandate for Brexit, wasn't it? It was meant to be the Brexit election, and giving Theresa May, a mandate to take to Brussels to negotiate safely through these choppy waters. But that's been derailed, to mix the metaphors in one way or another, and the debates are just another example of that.
It definitely has. I think both Theresa May and, to be fair, Tim Farron staked a lot on the Brexit argument. Tim Farron very much wanted to lead Remainers and to pick up their vote, and Theresa May wanted to show that she was the steady hand to get through the Brexit negotiations. But Brexit has fallen off the agenda. While it is still a concern, there was also the incident in Manchester. There has also been the Tory manifesto gaps, which have kind of overshadowed Brexit, and people have asked, well, if the Tories can't deliver a consistent manifesto where they don't do U-turns the next day, then how can they get through Brexit anyways? And there's been a bit of a surge suggested from Corbyn in the polls, and all of this has kind of made a much more complex election than just about who Remainers all vote for.
Yeah, and we just chatted briefly before you came on about how spread the difference some of the polls are at the moment, and how it is quite difficult to see what's going to happen Thursday, which isn't great for you because you've got your magazine launch coming out on Friday, and you were just holding off before you sent it to print to fill some pages with prime election coverage.
Yeah, so if I can just put a request in now for politicians, if there's a hung parliament, if you can all do your deals, the coalitions as quickly as possible, I really appreciate that. But it's definitely going to be an interesting one.
And that's the Stand Up magazine, isn't it? Which is a magazine mission statement to get young people involved more in politics.
Yep, and it's particularly since Brexit, actually, and there's a real concern that even when young people are showing up to vote, that they've overwhelmingly voted Remain. It's indicated that they would overwhelmingly vote for Corbyn. And it seems as though the country is likely, because obviously we don't know the outcome of the general election yet, but it went the opposite way with Brexit, and it looks set to go the opposite way to what young people want with the general election. So we just really want to make sure that their voices at least are reflected.
In trying to switch people on, one thing I noticed when I was watching the debate, and I've had a couple of friends with me, at times it seemed like a bit of a bun fight and a bit of a jumble. So whilst I know we said it was good to see democracy in action, do you think it was really helpful in switching people on more? Because it sensed that particularly somebody like Tim Farron, who I was quite interested to see what he had to say from his own policy point of view, he seemed to be more set on simply barb comments towards the Tories. And then you wonder whether this is just going to the one of the main reason people stay for not getting into politics is because they're all the same, and they're all, you know, all they do is they just argue and bicker the entire time and don't actually get anything done. And I wonder whether in watching the debates it would get people more or less engaged.
I think it certainly helps compared to parliamentary questions and prime minister's questions, because there's not the rose and there's not the pomp behind it, and you can try at least to get a direct answer from a politician and to
see
them.
It was more weak. It was more weakest links, wasn't it, with some of the podiums they were stood behind?
Yeah. I do think as well that it helps potentially smaller parties, and I think this election and the last election, Nicola Sturgeon in particular has done fairly well of just coming across as quite direct. It certainly helped Nick Clegg back in the day when he first started doing the TV debates and his whole very staring down the camera method. It helped Caroline Lucas. She seems very popular since the debate. I do think it helped kind of unknown figures, or figures who weren't really getting attention, to suddenly pick up a lot of traction and pick up some notice. In general, though, I don't think it permeates into the rest of society. I don't think it will make a huge difference. And I think a lot of the time people will tune in and they will still stick by the same person they were going to anyways. But it might sway 1% of voters. And it, when turnout has been quite low for a while, I'll take 1% tuning in more.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Caroline Lucas there, and I think she'd be interested in another of the points that you want to bring up this week, which is Donald Trump and the Paris Climate Agreement.
Well, you know, if we don't like the results of the general election, at least we're not going to live particularly long. With Trump, I suppose on good news, on the good side, is that Donald Trump hasn't actually launched any nuclear weapons yet, but he has guaranteed that climate change is going to probably be a bigger problem than even climate scientists really feared it was going to be by pulling
out. Am I taking from this that you're not a huge Donald Trump fan?
Well, I would be if he didn't keep putting everyone in danger. You know, it is proven now that, you know, over 90% of scientists believe in climate change. You know, that is an overwhelming consensus in a community that really are the experts on what is going on with the planet. And the Paris Climate Agreement was just about cutting emissions by 2020. It was quite a feat that so many countries had signed up to it. And if we even have a small rise in temperature, which we have predicted, even like 2 degrees, can really have a catastrophic effect in terms of warming, the weather patterns, also Arctic ice melting. And it's quite, Trump should be taking this quite seriously, because one of the states that swung the election for him was Florida. Florida has a massive issue with flooding, and parts of Miami are predicted to be underwater. In fact, Donald Trump's favorite golf course might end up underwater within the century. So you would think it would be something you would take a bit more seriously.
Yeah, I mean, his round is going to, his numbers are going to shoot up if he keeps knocking the ball in the water all the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to go and live under the water, I think a lot of Democrats would support that, but not the best plan, really.
Do you, is this, a, I mean, the thing with Trump did say when, before the US election, that he was going to pull out of this Paris Climate Agreement, didn't he? And
it's been one of the few promises he's actually stuck to, yeah, in fairness to him.
Yeah, and so do you see any green shoots in this? Do you think there's likely to be any kind of U-turn, or do you think the US are going to come to the party a little bit? And if not, what needs to be done? I mean, Theresa May, surely she has a special relationship, doesn't she, with the US?
Theresa May has been one of the few leaders who's been incredibly quiet on climate protections. And if you look through the manifesto, if you look through everything since Brexit, there's actually not been a great deal said at all on climate change, and particularly with the air pollution warnings that the UK has received. It doesn't seem to be particularly on her agenda. So I think in terms of climate change, we're going to be having, if any Brits are concerned about this issue, we're going to be having to look at Angela Merkel and particularly Macron to show a bit of leadership on this on our behalf, because it doesn't seem as though Theresa May is particularly concerned. I do think there is a bit of hope, because the world kind of rallied around America against Trump, because there was lots of states, particularly California, which came out against Trump and said, we're going to stick to this agreement anyway, no matter what our president says, which was very brave of them to do so. But even China, and China has been seen as a really great polluter, is coming around to the fact that the Paris Agreement is something that must be stuck to and that we need to protect the planet. So if everyone kind of bonds together and the individual states of the US can really stick to the agreement as best they can, the industrial heartlands won't. That's where Trump gets a lot of support. But if places like California, New York, the East and West Coast do stick to it, there is some hope that at least some of the agreement can be stuck to.
Well, is Brexit going to be good or bad for the environment? Caroline Lucas is a huge pro-Remainer.
I think it really depends on what government we get after this. Now, Corbyn has never been a great advocate of the environment. He will talk in favour of the environment and protecting it, but it's obviously not as strong as the Greens. If Corbyn does get in, I think that Brexit's impact will be limited in terms of the negative effect. If, however, there is a Conservative majority, climate change has never been particularly a big concern for them, and David Cameron dropped the whole Hugo Husky policy quite quickly in his Green initiatives. So I think in terms of England in particular, if the Conservative government, then climate change isn't going to be on the agenda whatsoever, and it'll be Scotland, particularly wind and solar power, who will be leading us.
Okay. And the other thing I picked up from the debate from Lucas was she was saying that it is all economically viable, she firmly believes.
To have a green economy?
Yes,
well, we need to switch to more renewables and cleaner energy, and it would create more jobs as well as sustainable jobs, which will be here in 100 years. You know, oil and coal will all run out, but they will also do massive damage and wreak havoc in the meantime. We need a clean future so that we can sustain life, but also sustain our economy. So even if you want to take a very pragmatic view of we should go where the money really isn't green technology.
Okay. And have you got any more for us, Steph?
Yes, so obviously a big news story that came out, well, at least for Nigel Farage, I think he was quite amused by it, was Craig McInley being charged all the election expenses from 2015. For those who don't know, he's the Conservative candidate for South Thanet. And the CPS said that there was now sufficient evidence to go ahead with pressing charges.
So this was him overspending with funds for his election campaign, right? Which
yes.
He then won. He subsequently won. So what's wrong with that then? Why can't he spend what he wants to spend?
Because otherwise then we have a democracy that is purely for the rich, and those with big pockets and big donors behind them will win all the time, because they'll be able to put adverts out, they'll be able to get celebrities out, they will be able to get their name everywhere, and therefore will distort democracy. Freedom of speech isn't just for those who have the most money behind them, although I'm sure quite a lot of people are glad that this story is coming out now, rather back when Farage was contesting the seat, so it stopped him being a factor. But it's quite a shocking story, really, which is risk being overshadowed by everything else that's happening, because it's very rare that something like this will happen. And we know that the Tories have been investigated before over in this election for overspending in seats, and it potentially puts another seat into play. I think it'll take a massive swing for it to go to Labour, but it's just another uncertainty for Theresa May's campaign. When she first announced the election, she seemed like a shoo-in for number 10.
And the timing of this must be quite questionable. I mean, just a few days out from the election that it finally comes to pass and it hits the news.
The Conservatives aren't so happy with the timing, and there's been comparing it to Comey and releasing that Clinton was still being investigated for the emails just before. It's quite strange how things kind of follow each other in life. But really, is this a big story? I think for one seat, it's unlikely to make a huge difference, but it certainly puts doubt, and that's the problem with the Conservatives right now. They're not in confident mode. They're in very, very vulnerable, shaky, we could lose this mode, or at least not have a strong majority.
Yeah, and I guess it opens the door again for the pub landlord, Al Murray, to stand, I believe. I think he ran last time, didn't he, South Thanet?
He did indeed. we could have another crack at it. The way this election's gone, I mean, do you want to have a go at it, Tim?
I think I'll pass it. It's just a little bit, you know, I love South Thanet, but it's just a little bit far away for me. Okay, well, thanks, Steph. Any more, or are we nearly wrapped up for today?
I think there was just really the reflections on Kabul as well, and Afghanistan. Just generally, there's been quite a few suicide attacks recently since the start of Ramadan.
One, yeah.
was obviously 90 people were killed in a lorry explosion. But also just yesterday, there was around 12 people killed in a suicide bombing at Kabul. And while we are experiencing horrific terror, we also have to stand in unity with those across the world from us who are experiencing this. We have to stand together and unified. We're both experiencing shocking incidents right now. And just really my thoughts are with everyone affected in Kabul.
Yeah, it's a really good point to raise. And it's, I guess, it in a way, if we need to help put things into perspective of what's happening here, I mean, maybe it's because it seems so much rawer when it's on your own doorstep. But for whatever the reason, you know, it's a global issue, isn't it? And, you know, surely the value to all lives must be the same.
Yep, and I think it goes back to your point on us all working together as well. If we all stand together, share our information, work against terrorism across the world, in the EU, outside of the EU, in the Middle East, if we all work together, then hopefully we can reduce the amount of tragedies I think that be happening.
Excellent. So are you going to, are you looking forward to Thursday? You're going to be casting your vote and you got your day planned?
I've already
staying
cast my vote.
Staying up late into the evening?
Yeah, yeah, I've already cast my vote, so it's out the way so that I can just report on all of the news. I will be at the vote count in Sunderland, watching that unfold. And obviously Sunderland got so much attention with Brexit. I feel like all eyes are going to be on us again.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Great. Steph, thank you ever so much again. Really appreciate you taking time out for joining us once more on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thanks to you too, listeners. You've been listening to the Brexit Podcast. It's a production from Warren Pohl, Jennifer Hahn and Tim Hemme, with the theme music from Kevin MacLeod. You can find us on all good social media. And we look forward to catching up with you on Thursday for Election Day.